Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, here we are. Another week of the podcast. What's on the top of your mind right now?
We've talked about wanting to be in person, and now we are close with Atlanta. And I'm just kind of bummed. A couple of our former guests are in Barcelona right now for that whole event. And I know you've been there before. We were hoping we might make that work, but yeah, didn't make it. So
you had to bring it up and just make me sad, didn't you? Well, I know.
I know one of them's flying back for something I'm doing here local tomorrow, so I'm sure I'll hear all about it and get even more sad. But
yeah, I definitely wish we were there. Looking forward to hopefully having a big presence there next year. It'll definitely be fun. So, who's the guest this week, Chris? And how'd you meet him?
So it's Jen Tiff from Syracuse. So both the city in person. We haven't had on yet. Well, we haven't had anyone on repeat yet, but we haven't talked much about New York. And Jen, she's one of those ones that I met on social, built a relationship there. She's very excited to tell the story. Sounds like a great history. So awesome. Should be a great episode.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Hearing the New York perspective, this should be great. Should we bring her in?
Let's do it.
All right, here she comes.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Hi, Jen. Please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Great. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
No problem. We have found the best way to start is just to build some affinity to our guests for the audience. And just tell us a little bit about you. What do you want the podcast to know about you as a person and your background? And we can get to your current role in next.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, thanks for asking. It's nice to be to be known as a human being and not just professional human being.
Yeah. A lot of times it's those crazy experiences that happen that influence why you're doing things and willing to change. So we found that really adds context.
I love it.
That's true. Like we all bring, or we all should hopefully bring our authentic selves. So it's to everything we do. So it's hard to divorce professional from personal, So my name is Jen Tift, and I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. So kind of upstate New York mentality, which is really kind of its own thing, and happy to expound upon that further. But I've lived all over, and I've sort of considered myself really since I was a kid, an urbanist. It's like you always got the impression, and I grew up in suburbia, so there was always this feeling though that like cool stuff happens in the city, and why can't I go into the city more? Like, and so as soon as I started getting a little bit of personal autonomy, I always wanted to go downtown and get into the city, and I've lived in a bunch of really big cities as a result, because I just always felt like I wanted to have that experience, and that experience was super important and unique. And of course, every city has so many unique characteristics. And so that's, I think, one of the, kind of underlying characteristics that has really driven a lot of my personal and professional decisions. but I'm really passionate about travel. really passionate about Napa Valley wines and very passionate about the Buffalo Bills. And out of necessity, I've recently become an enthusiast and a student of historic home renovation, which is which could be its own job and is for many people its own day job. So I try to dabble in that as a new, very old historic homeowner. But yeah, I think it all goes back to really, you know, love of cities, love of architecture, and really like a curiosity and a love of like uncovering the unique cultural influences in our cities and really how that permeates, you know, not just the city, but really the region and, you know, the community as a whole. So I'll stop there, but yeah, that's a little bit about me. And so, you know, I guess to just build on that. So I did the thing after grad school that I think people who don't know what they want to be when they grow up should do, which is become a consultant.
I was going to wonder how you fell into the Deloitte side. Okay, there you go.
So, you know, I did that really because I was interested in so many things. And I professionally, I'm very passionate about government performance and enabling better government performance. And so, you know, I knew I wanted to work with governments, but I, you know, at the time I wasn't sure I really wanted to work, you know, in government. And I loved the idea of getting exposed to other industries as well. And so consulting just seemed like a really big fit. And so I ended up, you know, working at Deloitte specifically, which is a very large consulting firm that works with, you know, pretty much every industry around the globe. And so that, you know, gave me lots of great opportunities. And that's really ultimately how I ended up getting really involved in smart cities, which, you know, is of course the sort of the topic of this podcast. You know, but I had great opportunities to, you know, to really be a part of the creation of, you know, the smart cities practice at that firm. And I did a pretty deep exploration into future of mobility and, you know, connected and autonomous, not just vehicles, but, you know, systems. And so, so yeah, that really, you know, that's really how I got started and introduced into kind of the smart cities ecosystem. And, you know, now I have the great fortune of being able to apply some of that, you know, it within a city and thankfully my home city. So that's good.
So cool.
Phew. Well, we hadn't met, so we got the right person. This can be great.
Yeah, so, literally perfect.
So tell us now about what you're currently doing, as well as the city of Syracuse itself. So, like, don't assume our audience, they're global, so they may not know about Syracuse, but also what you're doing as strategic initiatives for the city.
Sure, yeah, happy to. So the city of Syracuse is right in the middle of New York State. So if you looked at a map and you put your finger like in the centermost point, that's really where the city of Syracuse is. It's the fifth largest city in the state of New York. It's about 150,000 people, 55 or so thousand households. And so, you know, it's a decent sized city and kind of a hub or really the nexus point, you know, for the state because of where we're geographically located. And currently I'm the director of strategic initiatives for the city, which basically means, you know, I work in the mayor's office and I'm really, you know, thinking day in and day out about some of really our most important initiatives and, you know, really some things that, you know, cross over multiple departments. They're intended to be, you know, longer term, you know, types of strategies. That really will move our community forward and create opportunities that, you know, hopefully will last longer than, you know, any of us are in our roles. You know, and of course, one of the really big things on our plate right now, as with a lot of cities today, is, you know, the administration of, you know, a whole lot of federal funding that came, you know, as part of pandemic relief. And so that's a big focus area of mine, you know, that's a a tremendous opportunity, and we're, you know, so thankful, you know, that the federal government, you know, finally realized that it needed to provide some more direct relief to cities like ours. Just for context, you know, our county that we're in is just under 500,000 people. So we missed the cutoff for CARES Act funding initially when some communities over 500,000 people received, you know, money earlier on in the pandemic. So, you know, we were really struggling for quite a while, frankly. And so the American Rescue Plan, you know, was a wonderful opportunity for us and really, you know, did help us, or is helping us, I should say, address some of the needs of the community coming out of the pandemic. But, you know, our city budget is usually, you know, about $250 million annually. And we received $123 million in, you know, ARPA money. So it's a great, you know, thing to have. And I'm not complaining about it, but it did plus us up, you know, significantly. So so we really treat it as, you know, as a full-time job, you know, really not just my job, but a lot of people's jobs to, you know, plan for the use of that money, to oversee the use of that money, to make sure we're being compliant with that money. It's a quite a large undertaking to administer that much additional funding on top of what we're, you know, what we're used to administering.
Yeah, 50% of your yearly budget. You gotta pay for it. So we'll dig into that for sure.
Yeah. So that's a really big focus of mine. And then, you know, the other really big focus of mine is our Syracuse Surge strategy, which is really where our smart cities work, you know, it comes into play. And so I'm happy to talk more about that on this podcast, but our Syracuse Surge strategy is our strategy for inclusive growth in the new economy. So so that's a real important set of initiatives, programs, policies that we execute in conjunction with or in collaboration with a very large network of organizations and anchor institutions throughout our region. Because of course, to achieve inclusive growth in the new economy, you know, the city alone cannot put that in place.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Jen, this has been a terrific backstory. And I think we're definitely going to double click both on kind of how you're administering the relief money and then also the Syracuse Surge. But before we do, because we always ask this question of our guests, and I think it's actually going to provide some great insight to your responses on those two topics, as this is a smart city podcast. And as we know, working with a lot of our colleagues and guests from across the country, we know there's no one true definition, but it's been really fun to hear all of our guests' perspective on this answer. So we'd love to hear your perspective of what is a smart city to you, what's working, what's not working, and then we'll dig into those two other topics.
Yeah, so, you know, the way I personally think about it, and as I've come to really appreciate it, you know, smart cities as a concept, you know, and as an emerging industry, frankly, is really rooted in, to me, a couple of kind of fundamental things. One is, you know, really a comment about, you know, our society and some of our preferences. And the other is about the technological landscape that makes it possible. So, you know, in reality, we have been developing for a while preferences and expectations that have really shifted toward accessible everything, you know, seamless and tech-enabled interactions. And so we want to apply that in every aspect of our lives. You know, if I can, you know, decide that I want a new pair of shoes and I can get on my phone right now and order those, you know, during this podcast, and they will, you know, arrive later tonight in some cases or tomorrow, you know, I should be able to do that as well if I'm trying to pay my tax bill or trying to, you know, notify someone that, you know, there's a pothole or something like that, right? And the technological reality that goes alongside those social cultural preferences is that, you know, connected autonomous systems are possible. They're in place. Data-driven applications are the norm. They're becoming ubiquitous in all aspects of our lives. And so the technology exists and is continuously innovating and continuously evolving. And there's sort of becoming a universal expectation that we use that you know, and that it enables everything we want to do. And so, you know, I think from a smart cities perspective, when you apply that to municipal service, to, you know, government operations, kind of the business of government, right? You know, we have the abilities to use technology for service, for service to the community, you know. So if we plug in sensors and we know exactly when and where snow is falling in Syracuse, which is a very big focus in Syracuse for anywhere between 4 and 6 months out of the year, closer to four. Everyone should come to Syracuse. Closer to four, to be clear. That scares some people. So I love the snow. So to me, like, 6 months would be totally fine. But I say that in jest, and some people are like, it really snows there 6 months? No, I mean,
doesn't snow much in Phoenix.
Exactly. You guys might not know too much about that in Arizona. But yeah, if I can plug in a sensor and I know exactly where and how much snowfall, you know, has occurred on a given set of streets, and I can automatically route snowplows there, you know, using GPS, you know, why not do that, right? And that's one very specific example. But utilizing technology and data, you know, to provide better service, to provide more seamless service, and to make it easier, quicker, cheaper for me as a policymaker to understand if my services are working effectively, to make new policy, you know, or programmatic changes if what we're currently doing isn't working effectively. That's a very powerful thing. And so to me, that's really, you know, what a smarter city is. It's just leveraging some of this technology to make better decisions faster and ultimately provide services more seamlessly and ideally more cost effectively for residents, visitors, businesses.
That's terrific. What a great response, Jen. Really, really excited now to see how kind of you're applying that mindset into some of these programs. So you referenced, you know, the federal stimulus, ARPA funding, a lot of money coming to the city of Syracuse. In your response, you know, talked about enabling yourself to deliver better services, seamless services. So, you know, we do have a lot of city managers, economic development directors, mayors listening to this podcast. Talk to us about, you know, your experience with the federal stimulus. Kind of where are you prioritizing that money? Maybe what have been some of the challenges, and maybe what have been some of the successes so far? I'm sure others that are grappling with this money are also wondering how others are using it. So would love to hear about that.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, it is a big undertaking, and, you know, we're continuously learning, and we probably will be throughout the life of these initiatives. I mean, I think to date, you know, we still are operating under an interim rule. You know, there are probably more guidelines coming. So, you know, we're trying to make decisions, you know, as effectively as we can. And, you know, this is relief funding, right? It's recovery funding. So our philosophy was, you know, from the get-go, when we, you know, realized we were going to receive a substantial amount of funding, was, you know, let's be thoughtful and intentional about putting a plan together and really try to put a framework in place that plans for or programs the whole amount. So we really, you know, talked across all of our city departments. We had obviously conversations and engagement with the community, you know, residents and businesses and other organizations, and to try to identify the needs. We came up with a framework, and we even really came up with, in some cases, not necessarily the exact projects or expenditures, but at a minimum, kind of programmatic buckets where we knew, you know, we wanted to dedicate resources for certain purposes that align to the community's needs. But we put out, just so that folks had a sense of how we were thinking about this and what we were hearing from the community, you know, we put out a plan that did lay out the framework for spending all of the $123 million, of course, over a period of time. And it took us, you know, probably 2 months to do that or so. I think we put the plan out in early June. You know, and we knew of some specific projects that were and needs that were really immediate. So there were some things that we funded pretty quickly after we published the plan, you know, for example, you know, because it was a huge need, and it was the summertime, which is a time when, you know, it's great because we've got a lot of youth that are trying to, you know, get jobs for the summer, for example. And we had a ton of people who were still unemployed coming out of the pandemic. So we actually put money into a summer employment program where we helped incentivize, you know, companies, nonprofits, the city, of course, sponsored, you know, jobs as well. So we helped, you know, essentially pay for, you know, stipends for folks to work in all different kinds of environments. And it employed a lot of summer youth in particular who, you know, wanted to get some experience and do something productive this summer and, you know, hopefully help put some more resources in the family pocketbook. So we wanted to do a couple of things like that, that were immediate needs, again, kind of realizing the money is intended for recovery. So it's not really, you know, we didn't want to identify, you know, $123 million worth of projects that take 3 years to implement. Like right. We wanted to do things that we could, you know, some quick hits. Right. So there were a couple programs we funded right off the bat. We got a couple of quick hits, and then several others that, you know, do range in sort of, you know, time to implement and objectives. But, you know, our priorities that we're really focusing on are, you know, families and neighborhoods, small businesses, certainly, an economic opportunity. Obviously we do need to, put some money back into government. So there's, you know, we missed out on quite a lot of revenue, from the pandemic. So there's definitely a focus on replenishing some of that, but putting it into some of the services that we had to cut back because of the pandemic. You know, and then infrastructure, of course, you know, it's great to have some resources where we can, you know, focus on in particular water and broadband, which are always things difficult for us to really fund, or at least to fund as much as we'd like. And so the fact that those things were explicitly called out and allowed, you know, from an allocation perspective, we definitely wanted to be able to direct resources there. So we sort of have those four focus areas, and everything we do fits within them. And so that was sort of the approach that we took. And now we're really putting in place all of the internal controls and management, the structure to really oversee those different projects. So I think we've gotten out of our $123 million as of today, our Common Council has authorized spending about a third of that, I believe. So I think we're just over $45 million in authorization. And so we've got about, you know, 20 or so specific projects or initiatives that are currently underway. And then, you know, a couple, as I said, they were quick hits over the summer. Those have been completed. But yeah, at any given point, you know, we're anticipating having between 2 and 3 dozen active, you know, initiatives of different sizes. And so we know we need, you know, to have good oversight and management in place. And the mayor, you know, in particular wants, you know, direct oversight. So we know, you know, how effectively we're spending this money, and we can be transparent with the community, but also, you know, obviously the federal government, our local leaders in our Common Council and other stakeholders, because I think transparency is so key around this program in particular.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
One thing, how do you make sure that with all this funds that you don't find yourself in a situation where you need recurring funds? Because I'm assuming, you know, sometimes you create something and there's maintenance or some deferred spend. Like, how do you weigh that in?
Yeah, so we factor it in from like the very beginning. So we created early on after we developed the plan and we started thinking about, okay, how do we actually manage this plan? We started putting in place, you know, just some internal processes and systems. And before we initiate any of our projects, We actually, you know, go through a formal chartering process. So we have, you know, the department that's asking for the funding for whatever purpose, you know, complete kind of a chartering document. And that document, you know, goes into some detail about a lot of questions, but that one in particular. So we specifically ask, you know, how much money are you looking to spend? Over how long of a period of time, you know, obviously what are going to be the outputs or the outcomes from that funding. But we also ask things like, you know, are there other funding sources as well that are being leveraged as a part of this? And then, you know, based on how this funding will be used, does it either, you know, reduce or avoid another cost that would, you know, we could kind of expect to take out of our budget? And some of our initiatives will enable us to do that, which is great. So there's an operational savings associated with some of the things that we're doing. But then on the flip side, if we're truly creating a new program, which to be clear, like we're trying to focus not on that. So, so we're trying not to create too many programs that need to be sustained. But there are a couple of areas where, you know, there will be sustainment cost. And so in that case, then we're asking folks to quantify out, you know, what is the sustainment cost? And our city's budget director is very actively a part of this process and is one of the people that has to actually approve the charter before the project can start. And so, you know, he basically will then look at the budget, you know, and in a few months we'll already be in our next budget cycle, which is hard to believe, but but you know, that then he'll basically work with the departments to figure out, okay, how do we do this? But yeah, I mean, philosophically we try, you know, not to do that with this money, but of course, you know, there are some areas where that happens. But yeah, we've identified a lot of projects and initiatives that really don't have, you know, ongoing operational costs to them, which is great, and hopefully you know, have a lot of good benefits for the city.
That's terrific advice. And I know that's going to provide some really good insight for a lot of our cities that are struggling with those exact kind of questions. So appreciate that insight into that, Jen. So let's now pivot, especially being from an economic development organization. I've got to hear the story. You had me really excited when you talked about partnerships in the Syracuse Surge. So tell us about what the initiative is and how it's going and how successful it's been.
Yeah. So again, you know, our Syracuse Surge is our strategy for inclusive growth in the new economy. And it is just that, it's a strategy. So it's not a project. It's not a single initiative. It's not even really a program. It is really a strategy, and there are a portfolio of things happening around it. Some of which the city owns and drives itself, but a lot of which we look to partners to execute on. And so, you know, in terms of the Surge as an economic development strategy, we've got a few focus areas. So obviously a big part of this strategy is inclusive growth, and in particular, looking at all of the changes that are happening and some of those, you know, sort of trends and realities I talked about previously related to smart cities, like the technologies that are emerging, really changing every industry. You know, those create very different types of job opportunities in the future. And we think there's a ton of, you know, job growth potential in some of those, you know, technology fields, and really, you know, across industries that are going down the path to employ some of these new technologies. And so, you know, a big part of the focus of Surge is not just, you know, the city making investments in digital infrastructure or our own technology applications, which, you know, that is a part of it. That's one of the things the city is doing directly to contribute to our local ecosystem. But there's a real specific focus on workforce development. Mm-hmm. So we recognize, you know, if that's the case, right, like I think, you know, smart cities itself, like just taking it, you know, as its own industry vertical potentially, right? I think the last time I checked, and of course these numbers change all the time, but like, you know, the industry analysts are kind of good for, you know, for coming up with sizing and things like that. So, I mean, I think the last time I checked, which was, you know, probably last year sometime, industry analysts, you know, said the smart smart cities is a global industry in 2020 valued at $450 billion. By 2025, it's supposed to be more than double that. Yeah. I think it, you know, growing at like a CAGR of 14% or something crazy like that. So, you know, that means there's a lot of economic value out there. If we have more startups, you know, institutional tech companies, other firms that are making that technology, using that technology, you know, those are jobs in our, you know, local economy and region, but we need people trained for those jobs. You know, we need to make sure folks coming out of our K through 12 system have skills to compete for those jobs, that folks who come here to go to Syracuse University, you know, love it so much here, they want to stay, but they need, you know, they need jobs to stay and work in. So, you know, economic workforce development specifically is one kind of programmatic area of our surge strategy. And, you know, to work in that space, like, we've got some really cool partnerships with our local or regional economic development organization, which is called Center State CEO. So we work really closely with those economic development folks to design and orchestrate, you know, training programs and other job placement programs that really target, you know, the types of skills we think are going to be necessary. And there's a host of other, you know, workforce development partners that they work with to do that. Obviously, tapping into our universities and anchor institutions. So work very closely with not just Syracuse University, but we've got a great local college called Lemoyne College, which has a really cool expertise in cybersecurity, for example, and a couple of other areas. And so, you know, they're very much a part of this. We've got an awesome environmental science school here, which is the kind of the state's flagship environmental science school called SUNY Environmental Science and Forestry. Cool. Of course, they're doing all kinds of cool stuff in like renewable resourcing and smart grid and like all this crazy stuff, right? So we have, you know, this collection of higher ed partners and institutions who are really critical to us. And then, of course, you know, working with our Syracuse City School District for folks, you know, really at the more foundational learning levels to make sure this stuff, you know, can be a focus here. One of the signature initiatives we're undertaking is actually the creation of a new high school, which is going to be a science, technology, engineering, arts, and math high school, a STEAM high school. You know, brand new school, it's going to be operated by the city school district, but first of its kind in New York State, it will actually admit students from around the county with really deep focuses and state certifications, some of which I believe will be the equivalent of like an associate's degree when you graduate high school in things like data analytics. And so, you know, I think we're making some real big investments in workforce development and education. And of course, these are areas that the city can, you know, directly enable and help support, but we don't ultimately, you know, deliver those services. So that's just kind of one example of how we kind of tap into, in that case, folks, you know, in the education space and the workforce development space to really, create and then deliver very specific projects and initiatives that ultimately will help us achieve the goal.
That's great. Yeah, it's all sorts of things that can kind of lead to the ecosystem changing and influencing over time. You talked about your philosophy earlier about smart cities, and but we saw that Syracuse was named by the New York Power Authority as its flagship smart city. You know, what does that mean? Help us understand what that is. What's it mean for the city, and what's really making that designation a reality?
Yeah, you know, this is something we're really proud about, and it is really great. So, you know, when we started looking at the city's role in the Syracuse surge and how we wanted to really become a smarter city and help drive the adoption of some of these technologies and become really a test bed for these technologies as a municipal incubator. We kind of looked at, you know, sort of the universe of things, right, that we could do from a smart city's perspective. And of course, you know, there's a lot of great cool like pilots you can do with sensors and some of these technologies that, you know, that some of which can be flashy and a lot of people love to talk about, you know, the IoT and other pilots and we're doing those things too. And I don't mean to diminish any of them, but I think one of our conclusions was that we needed to make some more kind of core infrastructural investments in some of the networked technology that ultimately becomes the pipes for that data. So, you know, one of the things that we did, I think it was technically actually our very first like initiative out of the gate as a part of Syracuse Surge, and really one of our largest, and again, I think technically our first smart city initiative out of the gate. In 2019, we made the decision to essentially acquire our streetlight network from our local utility, you know, which had provided streetlight service in the city for, I think, forever. And so we set about essentially replacing that existing streetlight system with a smart connected LED system. And we actually finished our installation of the new system around December 2020, January 2021. So it's been in place for a little under a year. But now we own and operate our streetlights. So we have a full-time streetlight manager, and he has a team of resources that operate and maintain the lights. But we're automatically saving about $3 million a year just from switching to, you know, LED. And then, of course, the network itself gives us some more infrastructure, you know, on top of which we can add all kinds of other sensors, devices, et cetera. So, you know, we've started a couple of pilots that utilize that same network, you know, for other sensor and I think one camera-based application, you know, and then we've made some side investments in things like another, like LoRaWAN network, for example. But I think the networking part of it was something that we knew we really needed to do, because we ultimately didn't have some of that underpinning to really, you know, apply a lot of the other types of technologies on top of. We didn't have, you know, we didn't kind of have the pipes for the water to flow.
Well, you showed both kind of how you, at the core, sometimes that's hard to get people to pay attention to, but then you also found a way to save money with it. It's a great, great, great example.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, really, I think we were the first, well, certainly the first city of our size, but I think we're still the first city to have, you know, fully ubiquitous citywide smart streetlight network in New York State. Wow. So that's really, I think, the designation from NYPA, because we made the investment, and it's not just a neighborhood or two neighborhoods or a smart corridor. It is all 17,500 lights.
Wow.
However many we have.
Wow.
Oh, we're kind of wrapping up the podcast. We do have two standard questions we asked besides the smart city one earlier that are more, we've gotten really varied responses. So love these questions. If we were able to, what could we do to help you do more? Whether it's opening doors, connections, people listening, they hear it, maybe they can provide the service. You know, who knows? We've had some really interesting responses to this question, but how can we help?
Yeah, I mean, how much time do you have?
Yeah. Hold on. It is getting close to Christmas, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, so I'll say this, like, ultimately, there's a few things I'll say I've recognized now that I'm like on the government side of things and kind of the one who's now being approached by consultants and all kinds of other people for help. Like, you know, ultimately we are looking for partners. So I think, you know, if there are specific ideas, specific, you know, innovations or really cool things that people are trying, and you're like, we've collected these case studies, or we've, you know, started to create this clearinghouse of information. Like, I, you know, that stuff's always helpful, because with anything like this, with smart cities, you know, this stuff evolves all the time. People are just doing, you know, tons of like really cool things. And I think it is really still hard to find, you know, a single resource that you can go just to reference this stuff. So help, you know, collating, classifying, you know, potentially evaluating the effectiveness of some of these things, like really helpful for folks like me who, you know, it's like, you can't spend enough time in a given day or week.
Sounds like she wants us to create a market research firm, Dom.
You know, looking for this stuff. So it's just like the easier you can make the information to digest and pull out the valuable stuff, like that's always super helpful. You know, the one thing I'll say, you know, just for listeners and for folks who maybe do work for vendors, startups, like people who would come to cities and offer to help or, you know, offer to be a partner. You know, the thing that we often do need the most help with when being approached by, especially tech startups, is, you know, help with some of the business case around, you know, how do I sell this to my council, for example? Like, ultimately, we're going to want to do things and move forward with pilots that have an ROI, which for government means a lot of things. So it's not, you know, obviously it's not profit driven, but it ideally in an ideal case scenario, it does either help us save money somewhere or it creates a new revenue stream, which I think is more theoretical than I've really seen in practice, frankly. But, you know, but we're always looking for opportunities. But even outside of that, there's, you know, there's other benefits that we would, you know, certainly identify in terms of a return. But that's often the thing where, you know, I think folks, especially folks in the technology space and in startups, like, I don't know if it's just maybe some naivety to think that, like, we're not being approached by, you know, dozens of startups at any given time. And I probably do get approached by about a dozen a week. You know, so it's just acknowledging that we can't possibly do everything, nor do we have a lot of in-house resources to be doing that constant evaluation of alternatives. And so, yeah, we're very open to, I think, being a fertile testing ground. And so I think really recognizing, like, cities will sometimes need help with understanding the value proposition, with quantifying the value proposition, and ultimately fitting these things into day-to-day operations. So coming with perspectives on those things is really helpful because we don't often have either the in-house resources or just the capacity, even if we have the people, to kind of be doing that evaluation.
That's great.
And yet there certainly is a willingness.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, that's kind of the whole reason this podcast exists. The tough thing is then, how do you know which of the 45 plus episodes we've had is the one that is what you're looking for?
Right.
That's what we can kind of help too. That's why we ask the question. Is sometimes that's people great. Say, "Hey, I'm looking for this," and say, "Hey, go listen to this episode."
Yeah, exactly.
But we're doing more of that. All right. Well, our last question is just: we know you can't do it alone. And Dom and I, we've had tons of partners to do this together. Is there anyone you're particularly appreciative you want to give a call out? And more importantly, for us along the way, if there's anything as you learn about us, the podcast that you think should be on the show. That'd be a great double win to recognize and open the door for us to have them to tell their story.
Yeah, for sure. So, yes, definitely. I've got, like, again, how much time do you have? I have so many potential names, but I'll reference a few because I think they each bring kind of something different to the table, and they're all, like, really cool people, and they have, you know, great examples and things to share. And maybe since I'm not yet an avid follower of the podcast, but now I will be, because, you know, how can you not? Once you're on it, like, then you kind of have to. You're like, well, I guess I have to at least listen to my episode. So, but no, and I do love podcasts. So no, and yours sounds amazing. So so we work really closely, as do several communities, with an organization called US Ignite, which is an awesome nonprofit organization. But they really, you know, like the founders and many of the people that work there come out of the telecommunications industry. Yeah. And so they're very focused on, like, the network side of it, but also the smart cities application that, you know, that require the network capacity to really effectively run and operate. And so, you know, they are a nonprofit and they do, you know, they kind of play a consulting role with many communities, but they work with a lot of communities that are just doing super cool things. So, and we've been working with them, you know, for a little under a year, I would say. And so they're helping us with a number of our surge related priorities. And we're, you know, hopefully going to launch a municipal broadband program very soon. So they're helping us with that. So they bring just a ton of expertise in kind of the telecom, you know, kind of connectivity side of the equation. But they do a lot in terms of, you know, smart cities, connectivity and things like that too. So they're really great. Lee Davenport is like my main contact there. And he is like super smart, super funny, in like a nerdy policy kind of a way. I'm going to assume you're going to cut that out of this, but don't put that on national airwaves.
We know Lee too. Yeah, I know Lee pretty well. So
Lee is great. And I think he'd actually do, like, he I can see would be like a character on a podcast. So totally. If you haven't already interviewed him, I think he'd be cool to talk to.
That's awesome.
So Lee's great. One of my former colleagues at Deloitte, who is just a complete, like, an utter rock star in this space, and who's gone on from Deloitte as well to do amazing things in government, and now she works for Bloomberg, is Amanda Daflos. And I don't know if you guys know Amanda, but I mean, she is like national innovation superstar. She's heading up the new Bloomberg funded Innovation Center at Johns Hopkins.
Yeah.
So happy to make that connection if you don't already know her. But Amanda is
that'd be great.
Super cool. And she's just, I kind of just want to be her when I grow up. And, but we're, you know, we grew up in Deloitte together, and she's just, you know, she's really cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So Amanda's great. And then the other person, which is more like kind of on the city side, trying to think of like all the different buckets. In the city of Philadelphia, Emily, I'm just looking up her last name so I don't get it wrong, but it, I don't know if you guys
Emily Yates, you can check out her episode.
She's been on.
Oh, good. Okay, perfect. I think you probably had already talked to Emily. Emily's amazing. And she's just doing cool stuff. And I've been talking more and more with her about actually trying to replicate some of the things she's done in Philly here, because culturally and geographically and in a lot of ways, Philadelphia is just like a really big Syracuse.
And the way you described your role of crossover between functions is how she described it on the podcast. And I actually thought of her episode when you were talking about your current role. So that's great.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Emily's really cool. She's becoming a good friend. So I definitely, I'm glad you guys have already talked to her. I have like a laundry list of things.
Well, we can always follow up offline, but this is great.
That's great. And then maybe before Chris closes out, one last question: Bills or Saints this weekend?
Is there a question?
Yeah,
Bills, of course. Bills by like at least two touchdowns.
Love it.
Hope it's not another 9-6 game. I'm sure you didn't like that one.
Oh goodness. Yeah, you know, the Bills beat themselves more than like anyone else beats them. It's like it kills me. I don't get it. But
hey, Don, we always have first on the show. This is the first we've ever had a guest respond to questions and shop for shoes at the same time. So another first there. Oh, great. All right.
Well, can shop for shoes and do anything else at the same time. Just to be clear, I'm very good at multitasking when it comes to shoes.
I love it.
All right. With that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Jen Tiff, Director of Strategic Initiatives at the City of Syracuse, New York. Thanks for joining us, Jen.
Thank you both so very much.
Support for this episode of the Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continued to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, The whole approach was really revolving around what we call 3 C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
All right, Dom, so that was Jen Tiff from the city of Syracuse. What'd you think? What should we highlight?
Yeah, she's great. What a great leader, and you know, what a great story of that, what she's doing in Syracuse. I mean, she provided so much great points there. I want to highlight 2, but I'm sure we could talk about a lot of them. First, that Surge initiative. I thought it was tremendous how she completely understood that it was a strategy. It wasn't one project, one program, but it was a overarching comprehensive strategy. And what I loved about it, she fully understood and readily admitted that there's definitely some city-owned projects we own, but then there's a ton that where the city is just playing a supporter, an amplifier, a convening role. The fact that the city was comfortable of setting the strategy and letting people run with it. I think oftentimes, you know, you get either economic development organizations or you get cities that set the strategy and then want to own every project, every program involved in that strategy. Yeah. And nothing really gets done. And you don't create that network effect, right? So I love the fact that she goes, there's some we own and there's some we just, you know,
but that's what a great brand and a great tagline will do for something. It gives people a direction to go to, gives people within the city how to know where they're going. Because right, it's called the Syracuse Surge. And then the tagline is strategy for inclusive growth in the new economy. Anyone can fit within that umbrella, which means it's not just the city of Syracuse making it happen. To your point, I just think it was really well thought out. And then the things they're trying to make happen, they're very clear what they can do. Plus, entrepreneurs can plug into it. Workforce, you know, companies trying to locate. It's just a way you can kind of feel affinity to helping. So,
yeah, and I know a lot of regions, cities are looking at how they develop inclusive growth strategies. If you're looking, take a peek at the Syracuse Surge because it sounds like a great program. The other thing I loved at the very end. I highlighted because I hear it all the time. It seems like for cities, and this is particularly to the vendor and industry partner community, don't just come to us with a product to sell. Really think about the business model for the government. So that way you can help her eventually sell it to council, city manager, city administrator, right? Too many times we say, hey, here's a great technology. By the way, it's going to put millions on your budget. Hopefully you can afford that, right? Really think through how does this business model work? And then help them provide that argument back to their, you know, to their mayors. I think it reminds me of Jason Whitten, you know, who advocated for these industry partners hiring more MPA students, public administrative students, because they understand how government budgets work, how procurement works, how, you know, all these things cities have to deal with, because too many times it's, and that's why industry gets frustrated. They think, oh, I can sell to it like I sell to a private partner. It just doesn't work that way. So I just thought that was great. Help us with the business model because we want to adopt it, but you have to help us.
Yeah. A couple that jumped out of me, 2 quick wins. Just, you know, she highlighted an interesting one we don't have as a problem here in Phoenix, which if you put sensors out there, you can literally see the roadways that are getting snowfall and reroute your plows to be more effective. As opposed to, you know, we've heard about people deploying garbage trucks to the right places, but here you can optimize snow. And then we've heard a couple issues with streetlights, but here you've got one. They completely invested to take over the management, and they're saving what you say $3 million a year. Like, talk about that. And in the process, upgrade their infrastructure so now they can use those physical locations to connect all sorts of stuff. So that's, I thought those were just great, great examples. The one I wanted to dig into was a little bit about how they're using the funds. I mean, from ARPA for the response to pandemic. I mean, here's half of their yearly budget getting deployed over a relatively short period of time. You just hear, you know, she put a lot of effort, right? They built a plan. They had a process to apply, wanted to make sure it didn't create downstream impacts. They probably, she didn't say they prioritize this, but I'm guessing they did. If you could use the funds to eliminate some costs later, that probably had a high outcome. If, as long as it didn't create a new program, although they did create some new programs too, but they needed to be holistic in it. I just think if you dig in there was a lot of things. She talked about how that gets quick wins. To think for the longer term, how to embed the budget process, how to embed the program areas. I just thought there was a lot in that question that we haven't really done. We've had a couple of people talk very high level, but you can tell she very was brought in specifically for this purpose and knew what she was doing. So it's great.
Yep. Yeah. I took so many notes on that because that's center of my, all my conversations right now. So yeah, love Jen, love what she's doing. Excited to hear that she's working with people like Emily. So I can't wait to see all the good things going to come from Syracuse. That's for sure. Likewise. So, you want to pivot to cracks in the pavement? Do you have a good article for us this week? What's
top of news? What's that? Yeah. I don't know what stuck out to me. That's kind of what I think our audience wants to hear about. The future of smart cities, leaders forecast more digitally just governance. I thought that was really interesting. So it's digital justice, community trust, data-led decisions. A few things jump out. First of all, Emily Yates, there she is again. There's some stuff going on in Philadelphia. There's work in Cleveland and how to convert streetlights into a smarter network. But I think what's important is like things like air quality. We've talked about that before, like, and they're disproportionately affecting underserved communities. And so I think this type of focus, if you can take data and you can outline it and you can paint a picture and you can invest and you can really change matter or change outcomes, I think that's what it's all about. So that's what I took. Anything that sticks out for you?
No, I completely agree with all those. I thought this was very interesting, especially just because of the conversation. So they surveyed leaders from 15 cities, and those leaders forecasted smart city plans that include an emphasis on digital equity, data-driven decisions, and community engagement, right? All things that Jen highlighted in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Equity, when she was talking about leveraging data to help her with policy decisions, I mean, it's incredible, and it's all things that we're hearing our guests talk about. So it's really exciting to see.
Yeah, we've had a lot of guests talk about some of their approaches to engage the community. I think it was Dorothy and the work they were doing in Cleveland about how they would bring together these, I think they called it lunch table conversations or whatnot, and just really get out there. I think our guest from Detroit, same thing. It's just getting out there and understanding these problems in a deep way. And then if you can collect the data around it to show how to resolve it, you can really galvanize action. So I think we're just going to see more and more of these problems getting identified and then actually tackled, which means more stories for the podcast.
Yep, exactly. Well done. That's exactly right. Because it's a smart city approach, right? So I love it. I think this has been great. Sure. Good article.
All right. Well, with that, that's a wrap. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, Smarter Cities for a Stronger Tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.